KPCW News Time now, 8:23. Good morning. Well, the Park City Board of Education meets again this week in a special regular meeting starting tomorrow at 9 o'clock at the school district offices on Kearns Boulevard. In the studio, I have Superintendent Amber Conley. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, I've just a heads up. We had heard earlier from the county sheriff's office about a bear running loose in Jeremy Ranch, apparently knocking over trash cans. Have you heard anything? I mean, is there any precaution being taken with kids at the school, even though the bear is kind of more in the residential area?
Right. So anytime that we get a report like this, we let our administrators know, and specifically with our elementary students, to bring them inside. Of course, Ecker Hill this time of morning is the students are arriving here in about 20 minutes. So I just let the principal know, as well as our transportation department.
Okay. But you hadn't heard of any reports
yourself? I haven't been contacted yet. And they're typically really good about contacting the school district and keeping us in the loop.
All right. Again, as I mentioned, the meeting is at 9 o'clock. The board's first item of agenda on the agenda there is to, what, approve land trust plans, or is this just an update of how the land trust money is being spent?
Right. So it is a progression. So this last board meeting, we made sure that all the amendments were in. It's a very solidified process is defined in code. Tomorrow we will be reviewing the progress reports for the 2014-15 school year and their plans. And then the following meeting in May, we'll be looking at the 2015-16 school trust lands plans.
All right. And then can the school basically spend the money any way they deem fit?
You know, you could say it that way, but it is a very, again, a process defined in code. We have a school community council made up of a very specific number of teachers, parents. The principal, of course, is part of that. It's data driven. And so while theoretically they could do whatever that they deem fit, it is based on the needs of the students, which, of course, as you look at our district plans, that is as well. So they really do become aligned.
All right. You're scheduled to get a report from the Master Planning Committee. Any updates? There was no packet I saw in the
right.
In the packet.
So it does feel like we've been crunching a lot of items into meetings. And again, having meetings back to back causes this at times as well. So the Master Planning will be providing an update. We did have a meeting last week and spent some time really looking at what that 5-6 school could look like, since our governing board has voted unanimously on that. And so we're starting to really put some plans together. As you know, we have about $19 million in our capital budget. So as we look at using our public taxpayers' dollars wisely, looking at how much it'll cost possibly an elementary school model, 5-6, expanding the high school, we now are, it's some crucial timelines as far as, do we go to bond this year, next year, do we wait? I mean, this is really the work of our Master Planning Steering Committee, as well as I know you were available for the first workshop, but we have another workshop with the Master Planning coming up on May the 14th from 5 to 8 at Park City School District Office. And last time, there were about 60 people engaged as far as looking at maps, putting buildings in different places, and there were about 6 proposals / ideas that came out of that. So we're going to continue that work.
All right. Any news with regard to the replacing Dave McNaughton?
Yes, so we have our interview committee slated. We also are going to be engaging in interviews this Friday, May the 8th. And typically what the process is 2 to 3 candidates usually come out on top, and then those 2 to 3 candidates will be forwarded to me. And then I have an interview process as well.
All right. So are you looking internally, or are you accepting applications?
Both. Okay. Both internally and externally. And I would say we have a great group of administrators, and I certainly have no problem hiring from within, but we do open it up to see what's out there.
And then once that 5th-6th school is opened, or at least, you know, you'd need a new principal for that school as well then, huh?
Right. So we've been very open in stating that this principal, as well as all of our principals, are district employees. And we're looking for sets of skill, not necessarily at secondary level curriculum content, but really the professional learning communities model, what good instruction looks like, to be able to be in classrooms and provide feedback to teachers, being able to analyze data and modify instruction. So it really is that instructional leader model. And so, again, been very open with you. You're going to be hired for an 8-9 school, but everything's on the table from here on out.
All right. I mean, that just adds more money, though, as we have new schools opening, right? And just, you know, more administrative costs.
And that's a result of growth. We have infrastructure across the board because of our growth. More special ed costs, we need more bus drivers, it just is, it's full circle as far as, along with, of course, our classroom teachers.
All right. Board is also scheduled to make a decision on making modifications to the high school library in order to move PC caps in there. So what modifications actually have to be made?
So if you look at the way the library currently is designed, of course, it was designed, I believe, about 8 years ago. So there's lots of bookshelves, low bookshelves, that cuts the space into pieces. And so those bookshelves are going to be removed. The walls are going to be flexible as far as movable. The only walls that will be secure are the area for engineering and robotics because of the materials that we have in there, as well as our computer design, computer programming because of the computer software that we have in there. So those will be the only defined spaces. Everything else will be movable walls, and really opening that up. We've pulled some data as far as circulation with the actual hardback, paperback books. And of course, it's declined tremendously with, and I know that the thought of, you know, going to one-to-one. So we have secured some grant money for Overdrive, as well as some ebook grant money to be able to offer the books to our students in digital form.
So how much of the actual library space is being taken by PC caps?
100%.
Oh, 100%. So there will be no library quiet space?
That whole area will be used. So as you know, PC Caps has 2 of the 8 periods of the school day. So those other 6 periods, it will be an area for our students to be able to go. Have teachers will be able to go in there as well. There's presentation areas, collaboration spaces, and of course, workspaces for them.
Yeah. So I know that the current librarian, she's retiring in another year or so, pretty soon. I mean, is that kind of, do you need to replace that position then?
Miss Anita has actually been instrumental in looking at the design. She's been one of the ones that's wanted to change the look of the library because she knows how it's been used in the last 3 years. We also have new standards for our media literacy. And so as we look at those standards and rewrite how we're teaching our kids those standards, she'll be instrumental in that.
Yeah. But again, I mean, will she be replaced, that position? I mean, if we don't have a library per se.
Right. So every year we look at the positions that are retiring. We look at the trends in education of what we need to be able to provide our kids. And so it really is year to year of how we make those decisions.
Yeah. So not all of the books have to be removed.
No, no.
How many of the books are we removing? I mean, 2/3 of them or?
I'm trying to go back to some reports that I did receive. She's pulled some of the ones that, and the other thing that we've done is work with Summit County Library as far as duplicates. You know, what do we have in our library that they have? And being able to remove those. We are working with a school in Utah that it's low poverty, high poverty, and to be able to donate the books that we're not using to them. So I'm going to say roughly it's about 60% of our books that haven't been checked out in 3 years.
All right. And the cost was estimated at what, about $60,000?
Right. So that, and I will be correcting this in our work session tomorrow as we look at the building modification, because as you know, that's an agenda item. It actually is closer to about $150,000. And so looking at the amount of movement that we have to do, the spacing, the nice thing is we'll be able to use that space as we expand the high school. So it'll be a space that won't be changed.
That's what I was going to ask. Is this a temporary location for PC Caps, or really perhaps we build a new library when we put an expansion on?
And those are those things that we're looking at within master planning. I think both are options.
All right. During work session that starts at 10 tomorrow, the board will spend a couple of hours to look at how to increase its effectiveness by developing the governing board's mission, vision, values, and goals. I mean, we have those already. Is it going to change much? Or?
Right. So as you remember, we had a survey that was sent out last year to our staff. It was the mindset survey, and we received about 35,000 data points back from that. And one of the areas that became very clear is the importance of our governing board, their work as far as defining student achievement goals, but also within their purview of managing the policies and the budget around those student achievement goals. So we're going to spend some time looking at the mindset data specifically as far as areas that the governing board can improve upon themselves, building the trust back with our staff members, and then also moving into what our professional learning community models does as well, as far as defining collective commitments, which are collectively as a whole, what do we really believe in and what are we committed to as we move forward with our students' learning needs. And so that does get into defining mission, vision, values, and goals. Each school has been engaging in having their own mission and their own vision of who we want to be. And I mean, I know you've heard me say this, we want to be the best school district in the nation. But the mission of who are we on a day-to-day basis and what do we believe in? And so there's going to be some work around that. The Lighthouse Study, which is a study that specifically looks at the direct correlation between highly effective boards and high-performing districts. And so we'll be looking into that as well. So Crystal Hugovine will be assisting our board in these conversations.
Okay. I know you were scheduled to have a teacher negotiation meeting last week. How are things going?
I keep saying this. Things are going really well. And we have a goal set that by May the 18th that we'll hopefully have some closure and be able to end the school year and have it settled.
So the training's done. Right now you are in the negotiation process.
Correct.
So there's offers on the table by both groups.
Correct. So we are, we're getting ready to do some loop outs as far as some collective communication out to all parties. They've been hard conversations, but I think that our negotiations team with myself, Dr. McConnell and Todd Haber, has been a great team on our side to be able to have information out immediately to our both licensed and classified staff.
Okay. Anything else, Amber?
I don't have anything else today. Just busy time of year.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Superintendent of Park City Schools, Amber Conley. 8:36 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Park City Community Foundation, along with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association, are bringing in Marcy Heim. She's an international keynote speaker and workshop leader that focuses on major gift relationship building. She joins me now on the phone. I have Katie Wright, Director of the Community Foundation, and USSA Development Director Tricia Worthington in the studio with me. Good morning to everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So you two, Tricia and Katie, of course, work together on the Community Foundation, figured out you're good partners, or is this just a way to kind of share the cost in this case?
It's a little bit of both, actually. I enjoy working with Katie, obviously, but when you collaborate, it saves both organizations money, which is really the number one reason why we decided to do this.
Okay, so where is the workshop?
Yeah, so the workshop is on May 14th at Treasure Mountain Inn, so thanks to Andy and Thea for hosting us. It begins at 7:45 a.m. and goes through lunch at 1 p.m., and we encourage nonprofit professionals and board members both to attend, and they can register by contacting the Community Foundation.
Okay, and the cost?
The cost is $40, inclusive of lunch.
All right. Marcy, the title of your presentation is The Mindset and Methods of Your Major Gift Success. So give us an idea of what you're going to talk about.
Well, I cannot wait to get out to Park City and have a chance to share what I think is so important about this thing we call major gift fundraising, and especially at a location like Treasure Mountain. How perfect is that? The main thing that's different and unique about what I'll do is I'll talk about how do we think about money and how do we respect and honor the folks that we build these relationships with who invest in the causes that are so important to us. So we'll have a lot of nuts and bolts and methods, but we'll also spend some time talking about the real joy and power of philanthropy and why it's so important to the Park City area.
So give us a little bit about your background.
Well, I spent 25 years growing and raising my own portfolio as well as managing the staff of a nonprofit development team at the University of Wisconsin Foundation, and I had the opportunity there to start at the bare bones minimum, brand new program, and leave with a $1.8 billion campaign. And all I can say is the best part of that were the relationships I was able to make over a 20-year period of time with those major donors who invested in the university. Really gave me the hands-on experience about how important looking long-term is as we raise those dollars for our universities and other organizations.
Yeah. This, of course, is for nonprofit organizations mm-hmm. who are mm-hmm. constantly, and in the case of KPCW Radio, securing our funding for the next just six mm-hmm. months of operation. Mm-hmm. How can you help break that? I mean, and give nonprofits kind of long-term security, or that just is that never happens unless you have
an
endowment.
It's an excellent question. And one of the things that I will specifically be touching on is, of course, we had an annual fund as well. You have to start a relationship. You can't have a long-term relationship without beginning one. And that annual support, those people who step up and say, I want to be a part of this, they self-select by supporting your organization at whatever level is possible for them. And it's those people who, if we tell the impact of their giving and give them some options to invest in that can be operational, that can be specific programs, that can be long-term vision. That's where we start making that shift from just getting by year to year into really securing our future and the important work of our mission in a major long-term vision way.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Yeah. I was going to say, you're probably familiar with the Live PC, Give PC fundraiser that we do. Mm-hmm. And it's always interesting to me that, you know, at the end of the day, animals and trails do much better over people causes. Do you find that nationwide, or is that just a kind of a Park City fluke?
I was just at a presentation where a fellow was talking about a really knotty subject. It was an awkward subject. It was a difficult subject. And the entire time he talked about the subject, he flashed on the screen pictures of puppies and kittens. and other baby animals. And he said he was doing that because it would so make the room less stressful. The issue that we were talking about had nothing to do with animals. But there is something magical about some of those causes. Every mission is important. Every mission is important. But we do see that across the country, yes.
Okay. You also have a book. Tell me a little bit about the book, Empowering or Effective Development Ambassadors. It's hard to read here on this.
It's a short, snappy title, let me tell you. Empowering Your Board to Serve as Effective Development Ambassadors. I realize it's a lot of words, but I wanted all of those words because I want board members to feel empowered to partner with us as we raise money, not obligated, not bullied into it, but empowered, and I want them to be effective. And I want them to think of helping us secure support as much bigger than just the fundraising piece, but it's really serving as ambassadors, as goodwill ambassadors for the nonprofits that they step up to be involved with. So mm-hmm. the book takes us through my cycle of successful relationships, where we actually look at how do we create a joyful giver, how do we speak an artful ask, and I think the most important piece of all that we fail to do the way we should, how are we that grateful recipient? How do we continuously show people the impact that their giving has and how much we appreciate what they do?
Okay. Again, you'll be in town Thursday, May 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie, I was going to mention to you in terms of ongoing funding needs, I mean, yours really to keep the operation going in your case, and then and what else? I mean, what are some of your goals and ideas of raising money?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So one of our core to our mission is supporting nonprofit organizations. In fact, one of our strategic goals is nonprofit education, grant making, and networking support. So last year, we were able to invest about $1.5 million in all of our programs, including Live PC, Give PC, back into the nonprofit community and offer almost 10 education events. And we'd like to do more this year. So bringing Marcy Heim is core to that. And we support that, just like all nonprofits, by donations. donations, you know, whether or not they're annual donations or major gift donations, gifts to the community foundations operating allows us to offer these nonprofit seminars and grant-making programs.
And certainly, Tricia, there at the USSA, you've got the same thing. You've got an operation to run. You've got athletes to support. And then in this case, you've got the UOP jumps. Were we successful there?
We actually are still trying to close out that campaign. It's a $3 million campaign to rebuild the jumps up at the Utah Olympic Park. So we're still chasing about $300,000. But it's going to be an amazing facility. It's going to be one of a kind, really a place for our elite athletes to train, but also for the kids of this community to be able to use a facility like that. We're just so lucky to live here and have that.
Yeah. So certainly your jobs are a little bit easier with the rebound and the economy.
Yeah, I think so. But of course, nonprofits always have programs that they want to expand and offer. So at the foundation, of course, we'd love to increase our education because nonprofits sign up and we always have a full house every time we offer something. So we have ideas for more. We'd like to be able to give more money away and make bigger high impact grants to organizations. So, I mean, I think that a good economy is great for everyone, but the problems of the world aren't yet solved. And we all have solutions that we would love to jump on if funding allowed.
Yeah, and especially when you see a disaster like what we have in Nepal, I mean, do you start to see some of your sources dry up, Tricia?
You know, I think it's too soon to tell. I think, you know, specific to USSA, we would love to be able to further support our athletes. You know, our A teams are pretty much fully funded, but our B team athletes and our C team athletes are still having to put a lot of their own money into training. And, you know, to help them get to that elite level. So we're really looking to increase our annual fund so that we can help more athletes be on the team and they don't have to put so much of their own money into their training costs.
Okay. Again, Katie, people can register how?
Yep. Contact the Park City Community Foundation at 435-214-7483 or email office@theparkcityfoundation.org. It's May 14th at Treasure Mountain Inn. It's $40 per person, includes lunch. And we really encourage any nonprofit professional serving Greater Park City and their board members to attend.
All right. Marcy, Katie, Tricia, all thanks for your time.
Thank you, thanks. Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:47. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, there is a free lunch in Park City as the Park City Chamber Bureau celebrates National Travel Tourism Week. In the studio with details from the Chamber Bureau, I have Deb Lewis. Good morning, Deb.
Good morning.
So Tourism Week starts today?
Actually, Tourism Week started on Saturday. It goes for a week. And then the U.S. Travel Association designates Tuesday, the 5th, or Tuesday around this time every year, as Travel Rally Day.
Okay, so celebrating Travel Rally Day with a free lunch, when, where? And
this will be at the Visitor Information Center out at Kimball Junction at the base of the Utah Olympic Parkway, that tech building that's very modern with all those windows. We will be serving lunch from 11 to 1.
Okay. Just need to show up? Do you need RSVP or?
No, we make this a just show up type of a thing, which makes it a little nerve wracking because if it's a beautiful day like it's promised to be, we get lots of people. And if it's hailing, which it has at times, you know, people just don't show up. So a little bit nerve wracking, but you just deal with it.
All right. You'll be serving what?
We'll be serving burgers and we've got grilled chicken and, you know, chips and waters and that kind of thing.
All right. Anything else going on to celebrate Tourism Week?
You know, I think No, we just do the Travel Rally Day as most entities like us do nationwide. And it's just an opportunity to thank the hospitality community and also make sure our community is aware that of the economic importance of tourism. And so we have signs posted that just kind of give some stats about travel and tourism and how it's important to our national as well as local economy.
Well, can we talk a little bit about those numbers and how important it is to Summit County? I mean, what do you have in terms of stats?
Well, you know, I'm not the stat queen, so I had to bring them in front of me since I don't have to quote this that often. But we do have the local stats that you know, we, well, let me start with the United States stats. It's the largest private sector employer. And, you know, in Summit County, we provide about 9,000 jobs directly and indirectly for people in the travel and tourism industry. And total spending by visitors in Summit County is over $500 million annually. And $27 million is generated in general sales tax locally, and then $1.6 million in transient room tax.
So it's big business.
Big business.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just want to invite everybody out. It's going to be a lovely day. If you can ride your bike, we've got those lovely trails that lead up, because parking can be a little dicey. But so if you can get on your little commuter bike or mountain or road bike and head on over, that'll be great.
Okay. Again, that's tomorrow, 11
that's
to 1.
That's tomorrow the 5th. There will be no Cinco de Mayo sort of celebration. We're going to make this all about travel and tourism, and 11 to 1.
All right, Deb. Hey, thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Leslie.
It's Deb Lewis with the Park City Chamber. It's 8:52 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Park City Film Series, in partnership with Recycle Utah, will be presenting the documentary Watermark this Thursday at the Prospector Theater. In the studio with me, I have Film Series Director Katie Wang. On the phone with me, I have National Weather Service hydrologist Brian McInerney. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hi, Brian. So, Katie, tell us a little bit about the film. As I recall, that the trailer was mostly images. There was very little narration, at least what the trailer showed, and only to the effect of something like water had always changed humanity. Now we're changing water.
It's an amazing documentary. It's called Watermark. It's by this incredible filmmaking team, Jennifer Beichwald and Edward Burdinsky. Who is a photographer. They came to Sundance a few years ago with Manufactured Landscapes, and they were looking at how manufacturing in China, just the sheer scale of that industrialization of China. And now they're coming back with water and, you know, looking, as you said, at, you know, one aspect, how water has transformed the earth. You know, and you see these beautiful aerial landscapes in British Columbia, and just, you know, glaciers coming down these mountain valleys. And then you see the largest dam in the world, six times the size of the Hoover Dam, and how humans are also impacting water in very fundamental ways, you know, and in many ways, very, very many detrimental ways. And that's certainly something we're seeing here in Utah. You know, we live in the high desert. We're just coming out of the driest winter on record. You know, water is so elemental to our lives. And a lot of what this documentary does is by showing these different aspects of water and how humans connect to water, of just kind of reminding us how visceral our connection is. You know, who doesn't love to go swimming in the ocean or in a lake, or, you know, drink a glass of water, you know, at a very fundamental level, but really emphasizing that connection and also the scarcity of this precious resource.
Mm-hmm. So is there narration in the film?
There is. And so they do, you know, they do let the images speak for themselves in the beginning, and then they'll kind of come up with the narration of saying, okay, here we are in the Ganges River. 30 million people come to the Ganges every 12 years for this ritualistic bath. And so, you know, they'll kind of let you absorb the imagery and then, you know, provide a little context for that.
So I read that the film was shot in 5K ultra high def video. I don't know what that means, but do you have those high def capabilities at the theater?
We do. We do. Well, this is one of the benefits, of course, of being in a Sundance venue, that we have, you know, fully the capability of showing not only the imagery at high definition, but also the sound that comes with it. And some of it is just hearing the roar of these enormous dams, you know, doing a silt release. I mean, it's like being in the ocean times, you know, 1,000. It's unbelievable.
So, Brian, you'll be introducing the film and then talking a little bit about the current water situation in Summit County, as Katie noted, the driest winter on record. I also just read that Alta reported total snowfall November through April was at just 274 inches. That clobbers the oldest, lowest record of 315 inches back in the 1976-77 season. The first time ever, well, in recorded history in this case, that Alta has received less than 300 inches of snow. So is this the new low watermark we never want to get to again?
You know, weather is cyclical, and we're just in a very dry slot right now. It's going to get cold, and it's going to get snowy again. We're just not going to continue down this road. But over time, probably about two decades of what the science shows, we're going to keep transitioning. So the snow, the precipitation that we receive, the fraction will be increasingly in the form of precipitation. By the time about two decades are over, about 2035, we'll be about 50-50 in the Wasatch Range, 50% precip in the form of rainfall, and 50 in snow, where now it's, you know, over 90% snow during the cold seasons in December, January, February. So when you look at all these record lows we had this year, doesn't mean we're going to continue this, you know, year after year after the year. It's going to get snowy. It's going to get cold. We'll have big years. We'll have smaller years. But we're trending toward a rain-driven hydrology.
So back to this idea that until recently, water has always ruled us. Now that we've attempted to tame it with the dams and viaducts to some of the driest places in the country, like Las Vegas and Phoenix, have we gotten in over our heads?
Well, one thing to consider is the water that was allocated on the Colorado River Basin was over-allocated, because when they took the average, they did it in some very wet years. And with the warming climate, any desert regime shows to have less precipitation over time. So when you think of what we have allocated and what we're going to get, if the science holds true, it will indicate that in the desert regions, we'll have less precipitation, less snow, and actually less river flow. So it doesn't really matter how many legal parcels we have to say that I own this water. If we don't have it, we don't have it. And that's what we appear to be trending to.
So I certainly don't want to steal your thunder for your presentation on Thursday. But, I mean, what is the current situation that we've got?
So when you look at this year alone, and really this is the fourth year in a row that we've had this below average runoff. We had a similar thing in 2000 to 2004. And we have right now water supply numbers that are in the 20 to 30% in a lot of areas, especially down in southern Utah. And what I was going to talk about and what hit me with the film was very visual. I thought it was really kind of striking. But it showed the developing countries that don't have water, just how difficult it is and really how gross it can be if you live in that environment. And what hit me was we have this really great system right now. It snows in the mountains. It runs off in the spring. It works really well. Well, what if we change it? What is it going to happen? It's a change. How are we adapting? And what does that mean for Utah? And there are a lot of unknowns with that. And that's what I took away from the film itself.
Well, when we look back, though, I mean, we've never had to use the pumps in the desert since those were installed. And then we continue to see the spiral jetty, even though we've had really wet years. So the watermark has lowered. And is it going to stay low and get lower?
It'll fluctuate in the short term. But that's the part that when you talk to the climate scientists throughout the world, what's going to happen to our precipitation level? We already know that it's warming and it's going to get warmer. But what does that mean for precipitation levels? And the reason why the Great Salt Lake and the Spiral Jetty are so low and the Spiral Jetty is so visual, it's because of all of the allocations that are taken out of the Bear River itself for farmland. So it doesn't really reach the Great Salt Lake. And whether that will continue or not, it remains to be seen, but it's uncertain. There's a lot of unknowns and a lot of variables that we can't account for with a warming climate. It's a change.
Okay. Katie, real quick, when, where, and how much?
So it's this Thursday, May 7th at 7 o'clock at the Prospector Theater. It is free. It's part of our Real Community Series that we're doing in partnership with Recycle Utah, as you said, with support from the Park City Community Foundation and Park City Municipal Corps. We are asking for a suggested donation of $5 to help Recycle Utah continue with the programs that they do throughout the year on water conservation and water education because, you know, as Brian said, I mean, this is it's an important issue that we all should know about, and it affects all of us at a very fundamental level. So it's a beautiful film. It is appropriate for all ages. And, you know, I think you will come away inspired, I think, in a way that is you probably may not have been before to take action this summer and hopefully into the future to make sure that we have water to drink.
Okay. Katie, Brian, thanks.
Thank you.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW is funded in part by Park City Nursery. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
52 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. Again, looking for mostly cloudy skies. It looks pretty nice out there right now. Otherwise, a 30% chance of an afternoon shower. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Stay tuned now for Mountain Money, right after headline news on KPCW Park City.